See, there's a little floating restaurant here on the left. There's a lady on the boat selling food. There's a lady on the... But they're all sitting there eating. There's another person here selling pomelos. They're selling bananas and fruits here. And coconuts. Quite nice. Very peaceful feeling. Look on the right here, they're roping us in to buy things. Statues and all that. There's a little old lady here coming by with her bananas. She looks really healthy. This is so wonderful in Thailand, in a floating market with beautiful, beautiful local people, nice weather. And this is really an experience that anybody who goes to Thailand must come. Remember, from Bangkok, it's about 2 hours, but it's really worth it. And unusual. It's really, you can't experience this anywhere else that I know of. Give me baht. Give me baht. We were just at the floating market of Thailand, which is very famous. And this floating market is about 2 hours drive away from Bangkok. And it's very, very famous, and there's a lot of people, and there's lots of tourists coming there. And it's incredible because you just see boats on the left and right filled with people selling all types of beautiful local Thai handicrafts, fruits, food, clothes, Buddha statues. I got myself a beautiful Buddha statue. And everybody's smiling, everybody's friendly. It's a very, very nice experience. I recommend anyone coming to Bangkok, you must come to the floating market. There's no way to get lost because it's very, very famous. And while we're here, we're on a boat, as you can see, going through a banana plantation through the rivers. And the people live along the river. People live all along the river. I mean, now it's become a little more commercialized and more tourist, but in olden times, people would live along the river, and they would travel in boats along the river. They would do their shopping, they would do their washing, they would do their cooking, all on the river. And it's a very idyllic, quiet, and nice life. As you can see, the background is very, very beautiful. So today I thought I'd give you a little talk. And I think what I want to share with you is about having a altar, having a image, and the reasons behind it. And I thought it'd be kind of nice sharing. Since I was very, very young in the United States, I've always had a huge draw and fascination toward Buddha statues and anything having to do with Buddha's form. You see, Buddha's form, unlike ours, is made up of 3 aeons of culmination of merits. So what happens is that every part of Buddha's body, every part of his structure, every part of his physique is made up of 3 aeons of merit. The restriction of negative speech, the various type of negative speech, the restrictions of negative mind, the 4 types of negative mind, the restrictions of negativities of the body. So for 3 countless aeons, Lord Buddha practiced life after life after life, all types of austerities and practices to restrict negativities of the body, speech, and mind. And as a result, his body is the fruitioning, or his body is the culmination of three countless aeons of merit. Therefore, for example, if someone doesn't lie, if someone always speaks the truth, and someone always talks the truth and talks in such a way that gives other people knowledge and wisdom, then they will be born with beautiful teeth, they will be born with a beautiful voice, they will be born with a voice and a type of speech that will be captivating towards others. Also, their body will be very straight, very tall, and very captivating to look at. Captivating, not enticing others through desire, but captivating others through a we say in Tibetan, sije, charisma would be in English. So what happens is that just by not lying and speaking positive things and saying things that benefit others using our speech, it can culminate in us having a beautiful physique, good in appearance, and an appearance that captivates others' minds to listen to us. Also, we can have beautiful speech, powerful speech, captivating speech, and good teeth and good form. So from that practice, we can get that kind of result. Imagine a fully enlightened Buddha who for three aeons does not lie, does not say things that are harsh, does not use words that are schismatic, does not use words that damage others in any way, shape, or form. Imagine the type of speech he will have. Then imagine a Buddha for three countless aeons. He doesn't commit sexual misconduct. He doesn't steal. He doesn't beat. Imagine a fully enlightened Buddha for three countless aeons. He doesn't have desire or anger or jealousy, but he practices pure metta. So this type of being, when they take rebirth or they take form, their body, every part of their body is a culmination of their three aeons of practice. Therefore, when you hold a statue, a tanka, a picture, an image of the Buddha, when you hold any image of a Buddha, you are holding the symbol and the representation of three aeons of countless merits. Therefore, to see a Buddha, to make offerings to a Buddha, to prostrate to a Buddha, and to create Buddha images puts the imprint in our mind to have the same situation come along for us. Meaning, when we create Buddha statues, we venerate Buddha statues, we sponsor Buddha statues. We make Buddha statues. We prostrate to Buddha statues. We fold our hands to Buddha statues. We offer flowers to Buddha statues. Everything that the Buddha image represents, we plant the seeds in us to achieve in the future. So therefore, it is, in short, it's very powerful to have a Buddha image in our house. Why? Because we are connecting to an outer being who has achieved full enlightenment. And at the same time, we are connecting to an inner being within ourselves that can achieve this state of enlightenment, which Buddha has achieved. So when we prostrate to a Buddha, we're not prostrating to the statue. We're not prostrating to the painting or a tanka or making offerings to an idol. What we are doing is this image represents a fully enlightened being. So we are making offerings, prostrating and praying and venerating and paying homage to a being that this represents. So therefore, Buddha himself said, whether we prostrate to him or we prostrate to an image of him, the merit is the same. So it's very, very powerful. And it's very good for all of us to have a Buddha statue on our shrine. What style, what shape, how we like it, size, color, it is up to us. It is totally up to us. It's up to our own taste. But it's very nice to have a Buddha statue on our altars. And the Buddha statue can be the traditional, historical Shakyamuni. It could be Tsongkhapa. It could be Tara. It could be Vajrayogini. It could be Guru Padmasambhava. It could be Avalokiteshvara. It could be Tara. A Buddha is signifying a type of being, not just one type of Buddha. A Buddha image means any being who is enlightened. So we can have Tara in the center. We can have Shakyamuni in the center. We can have Tsongkhapa in the center. It doesn't make any difference because Tara, Shakyamuni, Tsongkhapa, their level is exactly the same. So therefore, when we have this Buddha image on our altar, this represents the Buddha's holy body. And then we should also have a stupa in any shape, Hinayana shape, Mahayana shape, Vajrayana shape. You have a stupa filled with relics, if possible, or mani pills, mantras, or anything holy inside. It can be even the hair of your guru. And when you have this in your stupa and you have that on an altar, the stupa represents the Buddha's mind. And then it would be very good to have a Dharma text on one side of your altar. So you have a Buddha body, a Buddha stupa, and you have a text. It could be in any language. It could be in any form. It could be in any shape. It can be in English, it can be in Thai, it can be in Tibetan, it can be in Chinese. But the text represents all of Lord Buddha's teachings. It represents everything that Buddha has taught, the 84,000 teachings that Buddha has taught. So what happens is on your altar, you have a Buddha, you have a stupa, and you have a Dharma text. And that's your basic fundamental altar. If you want to have more Buddha statues, up to you. If you want to have more stupas, more texts, up to you. You want to have more sizes, up to you. How you put it is up to you. And if you like, also, in the Tibetan tradition, we have an image, picture, a representation of our root teacher. So our root teacher can be directly in front of the Buddha, or it can be hanging behind. It is up to you. And that is to remember where you have received the Dharma from. So every day when we come to our altars, we shouldn't have any fears that we can't touch the statues, or we can't handle it, or we can't do anything with it, that we're not clean, we're not pure. Because a lot of people in the East are very afraid of touching holy images, thinking that they're ordinary people who are not clean, and if they touch the images, it would bring bad luck. That's impossible. In fact, if you are impure, in fact, if you are unclean, in fact, if you are an ordinary person, you should have more association. You should touch the Buddha. You should prostrate to the Buddha and make more association with the Buddha, because you're the one that needs it. I mean, another Buddha doesn't need to touch a Buddha. Another Buddha doesn't need to prostrate to a Buddha. They're already a Buddha. Buddha images are not for other Buddhas. Buddha images are for ordinary beings like us who need to culminate merit in order to become a fully enlightened being. Then in front of our beautiful Buddha images, we have our stupa, we have our Dharma book. That means it's Buddha's body, speech, and mind, kusum tuk. And then you can have offerings in the front. The offerings in the front can be the traditional 8 water bowls, 7 water bowls, up to you. Some traditions prefer 7, some traditions prefer 8. It doesn't really matter. 8 representing the 8 wheel spoke of the Dharma law. You see a Dharma wheel has 8 spokes. Or 7 representing the 7 steps that Lord Buddha took when he was born in the 4 cardinal directions. When Buddha was born, he took 7 steps in the 4 cardinal directions and raised his hand to the sky and said, "This will be my last rebirth. I will not take rebirth in a contaminated skanda or contaminated form ever again. This will be the last." So what happens is that you can use the 7 or you can use the 8. And the reason we use water is because we're not attached to water. It's nearly free or very cheap. It's the essence of life. Without water, we cannot survive. It doesn't develop attachment. It doesn't develop aversion. And it's very free to offer. So when we offer water every single day to the Buddha, along with that, we can offer flowers. We can offer incense. We can offer cakes and cookies. We can offer anything we like. Some people ask, "Can I offer meat?" Well, if someone gives it to you, you have no choice. Yes, you can. But preferably, you wouldn't go out and procure meat to actually offer the Buddha. For tantric ceremonies, that's a different story. I won't get into it today. Now, we make the offerings during the morning. I mean, these days, people's schedule is very different. Some people wake up at night and go to work and then go to sleep all day. Some people go to work in the morning and go to sleep at night, you know, the normal schedule. So whatever your schedule is, you can make your offerings during the day. When you pour the water, the water should be 1 rice grain from the top of the offering bowl. And the water bowl spacing should be straight, and the spacing in between should be 1 rice grain apart. Okay, what rice grain you like to use? Up to you. Wild grain, long grain. So the water offerings are 7 or 8, and then in front you put rice in between as a separator. You don't have to put the rice, but as a spacing. It's kind of a spacing for you so that the water bowls are not touching, yet they're not too far apart. And then the level of the water should be from just above the rim, right, just below the rim, I'm sorry, just below the rim. So therefore, you have a whole set of offerings in front. And you can do multiples. You can do 7, 21, you can do, 35, you can do 108, up to you every single day. You can offer it in the morning, clean it in the afternoon. You can offer it in the afternoon, clean it in the evening, up to you. When you offer it, traditionally, you pour and you put down, pour left to right. When you clear it, you go from right to left. If you cannot do that, it's not a big deal. This is just traditionally how they do it. After you offer, while you're offering the water, you should recite Om Ahom, Om Ahom, Om Ahom, Om Ahom to purify the water. And after you've done it, you just take a stick of incense, light it, and put it in front of the water, kind of place it in front of the water and purify it again, and then you may sit down to do your meditations. Of course, you can do more than this. You can do much more than this. It is up to you. It is up to your timing. It's up to your space. I highly recommend doing water offerings, and I highly recommend doing offerings to Buddha every single day. Why? Meditation and study is excellent, but the fruitioning of meditation and study requires merit. So people say, well, by meditating and also by studying, I do collect merit. That's very true, but there are different types of merit. All right. So when we make water offerings every single day, we generate a powerful meritorious field of energy so that when we study or when we meditate and practice and do retreats, we will gain the results. Traditionally, before people enter tantric practice or tantric retreats, what they do is they do 100,000 water offerings every before their actual retreat. So they'll do 100,000 water offerings in order to generate the merit. When I was back in the monastery, I myself used to do 750 water offerings per day. So I bring the bucket of water myself and I offer the water to the Buddhas. Then I do my prayers and then I'll clear it and do it again and clear it. So what happens is after you make the water offerings, you can do your normal sadhanas, such as the Guru Yoga of Lama Tsongkhapa, or your Tara prayers, or you can do your black tea. After you make your water offerings, you can do your meditations. You can study Lam Rim, or you can do your tantric practices. Whatever you're doing, you can do after you make your offerings. And this will be a powerful way to generate a lot of merit for us. So this is a nice, simple practice that we can do every single day. If we're in a rush, we can make the water offerings and clear it later on. We don't have to do our meditations. If sometimes we're busy or we're sick, we really are away, we don't have to do the water offerings. I mean, it's not bad if you don't do it. It's just good if you do. Example, if you go to the gym 3 or 4 times a week, it's good for you, I guess. But if you miss 1 day or 2 days, it's not bad, but you didn't do exercise that day. That's it. It's nothing horrible, nothing bad. So I recommend highly everyone to do water offerings and offerings to the Buddha. Not just water, you should offer incense, light, flowers, all the fruits, all the pleasant things you like, and try to do it every day. Try to make as many offerings as you can. If you know someone is sick and they're not well, you can do offerings and dedicate it to them. You can make offerings and do medicine Buddha practice or medicine Buddha mantra and dedicate it to them. If you know someone needs long life, you can make offerings and dedicate it to their long life. If you know that someone's going to start a business, you can make offerings and generate it to them. That's not the purpose of offerings, but you can dedicate the merit to them and whatever purpose they have in mind. The offerings is actually to collect the merit for us to achieve bodhicitta, the realization of shunyata, and in fact, full enlightenment. So a precious Buddha statue, a Buddha statue that's precious to you, that you have picked, that you have put a special corner in your room or a special room for it, and you make proper offerings and you clean it, becomes a place of peace, serenity, love, and the reminder of who you are and who you can become, which is a fully enlightened being. And it's wonderful on your birthday, on your anniversary, on a loved one's death anniversary, or on special days that has significance for you, to create Buddha statues, to purchase Buddha statues, or to have Buddha statues ready to give to others. Because on our birthdays and special days, instead of thinking what we can get, we should think what we can give. Because we came to the world to give. We came to the world to share. We came to the world to be a benefit to others. We didn't come to the world to take, to grab, to get whatever we can. So we have to put it in our mindset that we came to the world to give. We came to the world to share. We came to the world to benefit. And if we live our life by giving, sharing, and benefiting, then our life will be fulfilled. Our life would be beautiful. So it's very wonderful to have Buddha pendants, Buddha images, Buddha pictures, Buddha statues to give to people. To give to people so that they can be blessed. I always give Buddha statues to people to put in their car, to wear pendants, to put on their altar, to put in their shrine, if they're sick, to put in their hospital, next to their beds. I always do that. So Buddha statues has been a very important part of my life because I guess a part of me always knew and understood their importance and their benefit. And as I grew older and I studied more, knowing their benefits from a study point of view, I treasure Buddha statues very, very much. So all of you, please have a Buddha statue, anyone that you like. Please have a beautiful altar. Please have set up a beautiful shrine. It is not a necessity, but according to the 13th Dalai Lama, how well you set up your shrine, how well you do your offerings, is a measure of your spirituality and spiritual practice. This is not me saying this. I'm quoting from His Holiness, the 13th Dalai Lama, which I read in one of his texts. Okay? So therefore, today's talk in beautiful Thailand, on a boat with a green background, with a nice breeze, is about making offerings and the preciousness of Buddha statues. I hope this benefits everybody, and I wish you happiness, long life, and I wish all of you to gain the highest of the high, the most supreme of the supreme, which is full enlightenment. Thank you.